Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to each and every single one of you tuning in, logging on, and just hanging out with me for a little while. It's been a couple of weeks since I've had an opportunity to do a podcast. A lot of folks were wondering, good Lord, where have you been? Well, I've been in trial. I've been in trial deposition. I've been in hearings. I've been in administrative procedures. And then I finally decided, after 2 weeks of continuous nail biting and headaches, that I needed a few days off. And my wife made sure that I took it. I left the computer behind. And we headed to the Blue Ridge Mountains in Georgia, which was absolutely fantastic. We visited some wineries up there and did some antique shopping and found tons of great places to eat. And while I know it's not Napa Valley, there's still more than 90 wineries in that area. Now, my wife and I did not hit 90. I think we hit 2, and my wife said to me, I'm done. Let's find something else to do. So, with that said, it is Tuesday, the 12th of September in 2023. And being a Tuesday, that means it is a hashtag Terry Tuesday episode. So I'm joined by my very good friend out in California, Terry Fletcher. Good morning, and how are you?
Good morning. Well, you can probably hear from my voice, I'm a week out of a cough. My daughter and her husband came and visited us over the Labor Day weekend, which was fabulous. But then they left us with coughs. So great. I haven't been sick in 3 years. So you might hear me mute a little bit if I end up having to cough, but I hopefully be back to normal soon. But away we go.
All right. Away we go. So even though this is a hashtag Terry Tuesday, I'm going to start this one off.
Okay.
And I want to, because this is a topic that I believe has a lot of misinformation.
Me too.
A lot of confusion and a lot of, well, if you don't say this and you say that, or you do this or you don't do that, you know, technically you could be okay, but the truth is you're not okay. And I want to be crystal clear to each and every single person listening to this podcast today. There's a reason why they call me the compliance guy. And it's because I don't cut corners. I don't believe in taking unnecessary risks. I believe that if you are going to interpret the Code of Federal Regulations or something from the Federal Register, that you need to be conservative. And I'm not talking politically conservative. I'm not talking politically liberal. I'm talking conservative in your interpretation of the rules. Now, the topic of discussion today is one that Terry and I both have beaten like a dead horse into the ground back in 2022, because there were some rule changes that were published. But it seems like no matter how many days, weeks, months, or even a year that goes by, there is still information being put out there, and there are still questions that are lingering on when do you use split shared services and when do you use incident two services. So I want to, with Terry's help, make sure that we are explaining this as clearly and as concisely as possible. I am not going to omit any information from the Code of Federal Regulations, CFR. I'm going to stick directly to what the CFR states. because sometimes it becomes convenient to only provide the portions of the CFR that are beneficial to one's argument as to either why or why you cannot do something. My job is not to make a determination on guilt or innocence, right or wrong. My job as a regulatory compliance professional is to simply make sure that people have all of the facts and then to give you my interpretation. Again, I don't give you my opinion because opinions are like buttholes and everybody has one. My job is to give you interpretations, and I will give you my interpretation based on the Code of Federal Regulations in its entirety. So let me pause there because I don't think that I've actually taken a breath through my nose or my mouth. I think I've been breathing through my eyelids for the last 2.5 minutes. So Terry, I'm going to pause and I'm going to let you kind of chime in here, and then we'll take a look at the different parts.
Okay. So one of the things that I think, just to give some history here, when the 2021 new E&M guidelines came out, AMA redefined what a shared visit was. Now, many of us looked at shared visits as when there was a preventative medicine visit and an office visit. We're like, oh, that's what it is. That's actually a split visit. Well, unfortunately, shared visits also have shared split visit in the definition, I guess, or in the labeling of what it is. So unfortunately, things are called things that may not think, you may not think what it is versus what it actually is. The reason I bring that up is because we have a set of rules for Medicare and then everyone else. And everyone else, pretty much, I would say for the most part, unless they're Medicare Advantage plans, follows what AMA CPT says. Medicare follows it and says, well, we don't like this rule, so we're going to make up our own rule because we feel that rule doesn't really fit the criteria for our patient population, and we also don't like it. So if you've ever sat in on a webinar with AMA, they're like, we don't understand why CMS doesn't get on board. And then you look at it, especially, don't get me started on prolonged services, and they're like, you know, we don't get it. And I look at it and I'm like, why don't you get it? They're right. If you look at what they're trying to say. So in saying that, what Medicare saw happening is when the split shared visits in 2021 definition first came out under CPT AMA, it gave physicians and providers the impression that incident two rules no longer were in play for new patients, meaning that, you know, the doctor had to initiate care. It kind of looked like the doctors and the mid-level providers both could combine, you know, a shared visit and consider workflows. Talk about being able to make some money there when that's not what the point was. Remember the difference. This is all about money. Follow the money. Sean and I say that all the time. When you bill something under a physician only, you get 100% of allowable. When you bill it under a mid-level provider or a PA, nurse practitioner, QHP, let's call them that, you get 85% from Medicare of allowable. So what Medicare, the reasoning behind why they put this out was because they really believe that in the hospital institutional setting, facility setting, that doctors were going over when their mid-levels were seeing patients and signing off, period, and billing it under themselves and getting 100%. Well, I have to tell you, that was pretty accurate. Then they're trying to make sure that doesn't happen in the office setting from a new patient perspective. We know it in the office setting under the incident two rules, it can be billed out under the physician if it's an established patient, established problems, whatever. And so there wasn't really an issue there, but it can't happen on new patients. So now there was this big controversy where they said, okay, in 2022, as Sean mentioned, they had to then put out a transmittal saying, okay, wait, we're seeing that people are taking liberties with this. It was R11842CP. So this is a new transmittal that came out. And they even updated it for 2023 and 2024. It's 27 pages long. And on this actual transmittal, page 25, it goes on to say, it gives an asterisk right underneath the new definition of the codes for E&M. It says office visits and nursing facility visits are not billable as split and then in parentheses or shared services. And so fast forward to 2023, which that's still, and that was actually implemented effective in January February, implemented in May. And now there's still controversy. It seems like every time we open an article, listen to a webinar, everybody has their own take on it. So what Sean and I are here, and then I'll send it over to Sean, is to hopefully bring you where you're not mixing up your incident two versus shared split visit role. They're two different things. Secondly, I don't know about you guys, but I know that it makes me cringe a little bit. The hairs stand up in the back of my neck when somebody says to me, well, honestly, first of all, why are you saying honestly? Are you dishonest? You don't need to start a sentence that way. Secondly, when somebody says it's technically correct, oh no, I know. I'm like, okay, that means it's probably not the best thing to do. Maybe it may not even be ethical, but I can get you off on a technicality. And third, if we hear somebody say, well, you could do it if you don't call it that. Oh my gosh, Sean and I look at each other like, what are you saying? So we're trying to make sure, and I know everybody's heard best practices, but we're trying to make sure that you're following the rules. I know some of them can be as clear as mud, but as best to your ability so that you don't invite risk. That's one of my favorite Seanisms. He says there's invited risk out there. Whenever I bring a topic to him and I said, is this really true? He says, well, gives me the skinny on it. He can quote Federal Register like anybody I know, but he says it's inviting risk if you do it that way. And you, like you said, you've been through so many regulatory legal situations, you know what they're looking at. And I audit for Medicare. I know what they're looking at. And so I think we're trying to here to bring you what we know to be the most appropriate way to use split shared visits based on what the published guidance tells us. Okay. So go ahead, Sean. Hopefully that kind of set the stage of why this is even an issue. It's an issue because of money. If it didn't have to do with money, nobody would care. But Medicare does not want to pay an extra 15% for something that wasn't earned. And so if it's truly a mid-level provider service, that's why it should be billed. If it's not, then it can be billed under the physician. All right, go.
All right. So I want to set the stage out of the gate because I want to talk about a few different things. I want to talk about first 42 CFR. Section 415.150. Then I want to talk about 42 CFR section 410.26. I want to make sure that we also address the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual, Chapter 15, Section 60.1.B.
Okay, and I want to interrupt you real quick. This is really funny. Yeah. So for the listeners out there, Sean's mic is doing weird stuff. And I know it sounds like he's breathing in helium when he says a zero or a B. So just know, maybe that's what he was doing on his vacation. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know what's going on. I actually think I know what happened, Terry. So for our platform, I'm supposed to be using Chrome. And I actually signed in under Edge, Microsoft Edge.
I use Chrome. Okay.
And yep, it doesn't work.
You've got the helium balloon every once in a while. It's just really funny to me.
Well, okay. So maybe I have a spare can of Ready Whip. I don't know. Maybe. The helium.
That, yeah, I know.
CO2 that comes up.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Enough. I'm done being funny. All right. So let's go ahead and take on these sections. So the first section I want to talk about is 42 CFR section 415.150. Okay. So when we talk about this section, this actually is chapter 4 for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Department of Health and Human Services, subchapter B, Medicare Program Part 415, services furnished by physicians in providers supervising physicians in teaching settings and residents in certain settings. And it's subpart D, physician services in teaching settings. All right. So when we talk about this, and again, I want to stick directly to the Code of Federal Regulations. This subpart sets forth the rules governing payment. It's what it's all about. To Terry's point, it is all about payment for the services. This addresses the services of physicians in teaching settings and the criteria for determining whether the payments are made as one of the following. So don't get confused because I say teaching setting, because as we look at this, there are three parts to it. So section A are services to the hospital under the reasonable cost election in subsections 415.160 through 415.164. B, provider services through the direct GME payment mechanism in subsections 413.75 through 413.83 of the chapter, or C, which is the one that we're referring to, which is physician services to beneficiaries under the physician fee schedule as set forth in part 414 of this chapter. When we're talking about split shared services, these are services that are provided in a facility, an institutional setting, a hospital, a skilled nursing facility. A split shared service is where we have a physician and an auxiliary professional or auxiliary personnel, i.e. nurse practitioner, PA, midwife, someone who is a qualified healthcare professional, a QHP, who has licensure and an NPI number to be able to bill. These services require a substantive portion to be performed by one of the individuals, either the physician or the QHP. Whoever provides that substantive portion, whether it's the history, exam, medical decision making, or greater than 50% of the time, that is the individual that bills for the service. That is your co-visit, okay? You can call it whatever you want. I don't care. It is a split shared service. Bottom line, that's the reason why Medicare defined split shared services, because incident two is what we use in the clinic setting. So you need to draw a line in the sand, and you need to have a definitive understanding for how these services differ. I was privileged to work on behalf of the Office of Inspector General in 2017 in one of the regions where they contacted me and said, look, we are in the process of building a study to ferret out fraud, waste, and abuse on Incident 2 services, and we need some assistance figuring out some of this language. And it was truly an honor to be able to engage with members of the OIG, not simply because it was the OIG, but simply because they were saying, hey, we want to get this thing right, and we're looking for somebody's expertise outside of the government who deals with this stuff on a regular basis and can assist us to make sure that we're not going down a rabbit hole with this stuff. So when I tell you I have spent a significant portion of time on Incident 2 and split shared services, believe me, the only person I know who has done more in this area than me, and I'm not saying others haven't, I'm saying the only person I know who has, is Robert Lyles of Lyles Parker. This guy can cite this stuff like chapter and verse. So let's stop there, okay? All right.
So yeah, so here's my
Terry Fletcher.
And my friend Terry Fletcher. So
go ahead, Terry.
Yeah, no, I get it. And you know me, I try to stay away from this topic because it's not because it's controversial, but there are some interpretive nuances there that people want to kind of chime in on and say, oh, well, you could do it if this and that. I know you and I have had some conversations that's like, well, you know, and again, I hate that phrase technically, because I just think it doesn't fall to best practices. It doesn't keep somebody, you know, with a clean claim. It basically opens them up for possible scrutiny. But keep this in mind, and I guess this is where we can kind of take this episode and kind of wrap it up, is that the CFR, the Code of Federal Register, I remember you telling me that's really for federal court, right, Sean? That's for when you have to actually be in front of a judge and deal with that, correct?
Yeah, so okay. Yeah. District Court. Yep.
Okay. So then when you get into Medicare transmittals and LCDs and NCDs, this is what we're doing in coding, reporting, and documentation and compliance everyday Medicare claims. And remember, this is a Medicare thing. So you'd have to check with your commercial plans and see what their opinion is, if they're going by CPT rules or if they're defaulting to Medicare for split shared visits. But you know, just in a personal sense here, you know, I went to the physician recently, and when, you know, first you get the history taken by one of the personnel and staff, and I asked them, because some people just say, everybody's a nurse. So I'm like, and who are you? And the first one was a medical assistant. She goes, but I'm the doctor's nurse. I'm like, no, actually, technically you're not. And she goes, I forgot who you were. I'm just like, oh, shoot. And she goes, yes, I'm a medical assistant. I go, yeah, don't you refer to yourself as a nurse. That would be bad. Then the actual nurse practitioner came in. She asked some questions. And then again, you got to reiterate it to the physician. I'm just like, okay, this is like a broken record. Well, the doctor had known me, has taken a seminar or whatever, taken some educational stuff. And he says, just so you know, my nurse practitioner is just training with me today. Nothing she does is getting added to my visit, and I'm not including her in anything we're billing. And I started laughing. I'm like, I'm not the shared visit police. I go, well, you're fine. I said, what, you know, and he goes, well, I just know that listening to you on incident two and listening to you on shared visits, I know what we can count and what we can't do in the office. And so I was like, okay, well, good for you. But, you know, I understand workflows, and I understand the need to have your mid-levels there so that they can, you know, help out. However, a lot of providers are timing their visit in the office. You cannot use that collaborative time. Remember what Sean said, it's physician. It's not the mid-levels as well. And especially a new patient, it's all physician, unless you just want to take a 15% reduction, okay, and bill it out under the, you know, nurse practitioner or PA. So just remember that in a place of service 11 office, it's not something you can do for a Medicare patient. Follow the transmittals, the LCDs, the NCDs, and you'll be fine. In the hospital setting, now it has to be very well documented. Plus, you're going to have to use that FS modifier to identify it. And so regardless of who did most or the substantive work or more time, that's who gets the FS, and F as in Frank, S as in Sam modifier on that split shared visit. Remember, what does Medicare do with anything we submit? They data mine. They want statistical information so they know if they should do it again the next year. And so, and if they should continue to give us money for it. And so this is where, if you want to continue to get paid for what you're doing, then you need to make sure you do it correctly. Otherwise, it can be low-hanging fruit. It can be invited risk. And if you do it where it's just technically, possibly, you might need a defense attorney accurate, then not only is it going to cost you money to, you know, cut corners, but it's going to give you a reputation that you don't want. And so is it important to have our mid-levels, our nurses, our medical assistants, our auxiliary staff, our clinical staff? Yes. But know who you can include their time and their work and who you can't. So it's the same thing when we look at, you know, E&M service in the office. Let's say you have medical assistants that take a history. Are they allowed to now? Yes. Yes, they are. Doctors just need to refer back to it. But if you're timing your visit, you can't use any part of what they did as part of your time. If you use a scribe, that's a scribe. You cannot use any part of their time. So, and it says that right in the rules. It says if you're timing your visit, nothing your staff does can be used. So now people think of workflows. Well, how did that help me? Well, if you're basing everything on medical decision-making, it helped you because you don't have to go data collect again. But a lot of rules, whether it be Medicare, whether it be the Federal Register, whether it be just a payer contract, they really rely on the providers, the physicians, everyone being, what's the word, on the up and up. You know, they rely, you know, look at what it says for the appropriate history and exam. They're saying it's whatever the doctor thinks is appropriate, which is terrible for an auditor, but they're relying on good faith, that you're doing things appropriately, that you are not trying to cut corners, you're not trying to get around anything, and that you're using your published guidance as your tool to do things right. And that's all Sean and I are saying, is that one thing would be really important is that because this has such a muddied water situation, go through the rules, look at your workflows, and then write up a compliance policy for it, and then make sure everyone follows it. That way, you know how things work in your office. And if you're ever questioned, you go back to your policy, say, well, this is what we do. It's written for everybody to know, and this is what we follow. And then Sean, I'll send it over to you for any last remarks.
Well, before I go into last remarks, I want to drive home the point as to why split shared services are only for the institutional or facility setting. So I want to go look at section 410.26, which are services and supplies incident to a physician's professional services. These are the conditions. So the first thing that you have to do is you have to define what auxiliary personnel is. And this is any individual who is acting under the supervision of a physician or other practitioner, regardless of their employment status, whether they're a W-2, leased, or independent contractor, 1099, right? B, they're under direct supervision, which means the level of supervision by the physician or other practitioner of the auxiliary personnel is defined at 410.32B3II. Okay. Now, this is the most important one under incident two. It defines non-institutional setting, which means all settings other than a hospital or skilled nursing facility. So that means incident two can't be performed in a hospital or a nursing facility, a skilled nursing facility. It can only be performed in the ambulatory setting, the physician clinic. That means split shared services are reserved for the institutional or facility setting. Eight, services and supplies means any service or supplies, including drugs or biologicals that are not usually self-administered, that are included in section 1861S2A of the Act and are not specifically listed in the Act as a separate benefit included in the Medicare program. Folks, bottom line is this. There has been, there will continue to be confusion on incident two versus split shared services. The easiest way for me to explain this to you and the safest way for you to be able to use these services is to remember split shared hospital, skilled nursing facilities, incident two, clinic, period. There's arguments about, well, if a nurse goes into the room first to take vitals, well, a nurse is an auxiliary professional, but they don't bill for their services. That makes it an integral, although incidental part of the physician's services. So even if the nurse goes in first and takes the vitals, the physician still is the person who is creating the plan of care. If you have a nurse practitioner that sees a patient on an initial visit, even if the physician goes into the room after the nurse practitioner, you can't have a split shared service. The service has to be billed under the nurse practitioner or the PA. Again, in order for something to be an incident to service, the initial visit has to be performed by the physician and they have to create a plan of care. If the initial visit is done by a PA or a nurse practitioner and they create the plan of care, subsequent visits are not billable under the incident to billing provision.
People miss that, Sean. Do you know people miss that? It's like, you know what? Now the primary provider is the mid-level.
That is correct. If the physician does not establish the plan of care at the first visit, all subsequent visits have to be billed under the non-physician practitioner because they established the plan of care. Folks, here's what I will tell you in my parting shot. Words of wisdom, maybe. Incident to services, don't do them. The risk reward is too great. When we're talking about 15% of the allowed service, it sometimes equates to being able to put cheese onto a quarter pounder at McDonald's. And for me, it is one of the most audited, one of the most sought after types of billing provisional services by the government, not only the MACs, but the Office of Inspector General. If you can avoid billing incident two, do it. Get all of your non-physician practitioners credentialed and bill under their numbers. Because remember, if the physician is not present on site, meaning direct supervision, and they are not immediately available, you can't bill at incident two.
And don't forget, they have to be there in a clinical capacity. They can't come in on their day off and start catching up on charts and then say,
oh, it's an administrative role.
Yeah. That's, I mean, there's so many rules there. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, if you're in a clinic setting and you have multiple physicians, any physician can supervise. That's in the rule. Any physician can supervise. But what happens if you're a one doctor, two doctor practice, one doctor's in the surgery center doing procedures, the other doctor's out of the office on vacation or took a personal day, whatever it may be? There's no incident two. There's no direct supervision. Nobody's immediately available. So again, the other confusing part is, what happens if a patient shows up who the NP or PA is acting under the plan of care that was established by the physician, and now the patient has a new problem, or they have an exacerbation of that problem, and we have to change medications, we have to change the plan of care? That is no longer a subsequent visit under the current plan of care. That now has to be billed under the nurse practitioner if they see the patient. It is not an incident to service. So, long story short, split shared services. Stick to only using that term and providing those services in a hospital or skilled nursing facility setting. Don't try to use that term in the clinic because it's wrong. Period. All right, Terry.
And that wraps it up for me. Yep, that's it. No, I think that you cut it.
All right. Let's go ahead and wrap this thing up. As always, thank you all for tuning in, logging on, and just hanging out with us for a little while. I'll be back later this week with some more episodes of The Compliance Guy. So until then, remember, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media @The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.